We begin a new week of morning shows today on WRCO Radio with a spotlight on the River Valley School District. And joining us is River Valley District Administrator Lauren Glassbrenner for his monthly visit. Good to see you again, my friend.
Thank you, Phil. I'm glad to be here. It's a beautiful, beautiful day down in the valleys.
Who knew you were such a guru of trivia? You won trivia from us the other night as well.
Yeah, well, I was driving over to Richland Center off, you know, kind of coming out of Sextonville, and I heard that, and I thought, oh, I think that's from this movie. And so I thought, oh, I can call him up and see if he'll take it. And you answered right on the phone, and I gave you the answer, and you said I was correct. So it's always nice to know a little bit about trivia on the backside. It was a great... Well, it's not a great movie, but it's a funny movie. So yes. It was something that was funny to be remembering from my teenage years.
Oh, sure.
For sure. It was awesome.
Back in the day there, that's impressive too. You didn't Google it or anything. You were driving, sir. And right off the top of your head. So.
Yes. I probably shouldn't admit that I called you while I was driving either, but I did.
Oh, so yeah. It's all good. It's safer with the hands-free stuff
now. Yes, for sure.
Yeah,
for
absolutely. Sure. So what's going on in the Valley these days?
Well, the Valley's a place that's got so much activity. I told my staff the other day, I walked around the campus. I went from elementary, and then I went from elementary over to the junior high school, and from there I came back over to the intermediate school, and in the middle of it, there's kids on that track. They're getting ready for this big track meet on Wednesday and Thursday for the little people called Little Hawks, and all their parents get to come and see them. So everybody from 4K through grade 6 will be out in the track, and it's kind of a culminating activity for big units in physical education around track and around jumping and around all the things that are on track and field. So that's exciting. So the kids will be out there. There'll be lots of action on Wednesday and Thursday. But as I made those rounds with that track in the middle of it, it just made me smile and be so happy about the great things that are happening with the kids, with them being involved, with it being finally nice out, with the snow finally have melted. Even though it's a little chilly, kids are still out there in that beautiful sunshine, having a good time and remembering that school's got those wonderful parts of it too. So it was just a great walk. It was a great recollection to just pause and reflect about the good things that are happening. If you turn on the TV or you worry about the news, you can get caught up going down, as they say, those rabbit holes of bad ideas. And it was just really nice to be out in the sunshine and see the kids enjoying the sunshine and being productive at the same time. So we're busy. We're doing great things in the Valley, and it was exciting to see the great things that are coming up as we try to finish strong.
Athletic-wise, the River Valley Track Invitational is always one of those kind of year-end tune-ups before the postseason. You had that on Friday night.
We did, and it was busy. I believe the night before we had the River Valley Middle School Track Invite, and then we had the River Valley High School track invite. So it was busy nights on Thursday and Friday trying to get things going. You know, you've got maybe a soccer team that's running up to the Dells. You've got track teams here. You've got golf teams running somewhere else. You've got softball, fast pitch running here. You've got baseball running there. So there's tons of activity, and it's fun to see those great things for the kids after school.
Wrapping up here, what do you have, 2 or 3 weeks left?
Yeah, pretty much 3 weeks. So the final days will hit for the kids. They do have to come back in that first week of June just to get everything in, because we had nice long breaks at spring break and at the holidays. But they'll come back. They'll be done. I believe that's June 5th. The week prior, though, we'll have graduation on the 30th. So fun times, getting everything ready. Everybody's kind of staying engaged, right? We're really trying to make sure that we keep the roof on and don't let the craziness overtake us all. So we're excited about all the great things we have to do in the final days.
And your valedictorian and salutatorians, those have been announced, I presume?
They have. I can't remember their names right now, but I know they're out there, and I know we've got great things happening. So we'll have great speeches. We'll have great things at that graduation. And, you know, it's a nice, big, beautiful gym, and they'll have electronic parts, too. So it'll be really fun. Really a fun celebration to finalize the graduating class of 2026.
One of the things you wanted to talk about today was to kind of get into a portrait of a graduate.
Yeah, so when we talk about graduation, we talk about what we want every graduate to have in River Valley. And River Valley is a unique place. You know that, and I talk of it all the time, so anybody that's been around me knows that it's an incredible place that's made up of four complex, wonderful communities. You've got the Spring Green community, you've got the Plain, you've got Lone Rock, and you've got Arena. And around them, you have everything from Hyde to Clyde to Bear Valley to, you know, all the different little like small burgs that make up the villages that make up our townships. And so we've been excited about all the great things that bring us together. So that makes River Valley. But as you come together, you also want to make sure that every graduate has a kind of a demographic. You want to make sure that every graduate that leaves you is something special. And so these are kind of just some beliefs that we are asked by the Department of Public Instruction to have out there. And the portrait of a graduate really gets ready for, are these kids ready for their career? Are these kids ready to get out in our community? Back in the day, they talked about being college and career ready. Not as many kids are going to college. If they are, they're going 2-year, not 4-year, and they're getting ready for a career instead. So I want to capitalize on that idea that we just want them to be community and career ready. That could be that they go off to a career in the armed forces, or it could be that they spend 4 or 2 years at an additional school, but that we want them to be ready for the next steps. And what we're finding is that employers are really digging in that they want kids to be ready and engaged as a worker, I guess I would say. And so we have 5 pillars in Valley that we really have thought about deeply. And those are to be a collaborator, to be a good communicator, to be a good critical thinker, to be resilient. When somebody throws a problem your way, you try to work through it and get to the next best solution. And then to be responsible, to make sure that you're making the right choices and identifying those things. Well, every district has had kind of these career and community ready ideas, as they say, the portrait of a graduate. But now the Department of Public Instruction is going to make it a big part of a new study. And so I was in some training last week up at CESA 3 in Fenimore, and they're really looking at our workforce and what are the school districts getting ready for in our workforce. And they really had us go through some really key reflective questions about, as you're getting kids ready for that workforce, what does that kid look like? And it's not a surprise to many of us that the workforce of today is very different than the workforce of 50 years ago. 50 years ago, there wasn't technology. There weren't computers. There wasn't AI. There wasn't just things being run by data sets. And now there are. And so it's really changed the way that schools are asking, I guess, kids to behave. And it's really asking from the community, what do we want the kids to be ready to do?
You have the youth apprenticeship program, which really is thriving. Do you feel that kind of helps set
the stage? It does. I think when you can get a kid into youth apprenticeship, it really gives them their eyes on the job to see if they like it. Get out there and try it. Do you enjoy it? If they want to be in restaurant management, go out and work at a restaurant for a little bit. So what youth apprenticeship offers to our young people would be somewhere in their junior or senior year, they kind of step away from the school day in our four walls and they jump into a school day at that job placement. And so it's really an apprenticeship, whether it's plumbing, whether it's restaurant, whether it's farm, whatever it is out in that field and they have to keep up the curriculum too. So they have to find the teacher there. They have to find the mentor there. They still have to do a lot of homework around it. So they're very accountable to what we expect them to do. But those are the things that, yeah, really keep a kid inspired in those final years if they're directly leaving us and going into a career world.
Plus, it contributes to the workforce in the River Valley District too, doesn't
it? Yeah, I think it does. And I think it helps build those relationships that are between the workforce, the companies that run that workforce, and their local school district. It's a really good combination to bring everybody together. The other thing that it's really having us look at, it's really taking a look at what jobs in the United States are declining and what jobs are growing. And so I thought I'd bring to you guys this morning just some ideas of what jobs are kind of declining and what jobs are growing. So the jobs that are declining, whether we like it or not, this is what's happening throughout the Midwest. Cashier and ticket clerks, well, we're having to check ourselves out, right? Administrative assistants, maybe caretakers, housekeepers, print materials and the related trades that go along with print materials, counting, bookkeeping, payroll, those are all turning on to electronics, transportation, security, banking, all of those have become so much more electronic that we're really getting kids ready for faster growing jobs. I love the faster growing jobs as well because it really leans into some of the strengths of the southwestern corner of Wisconsin. Farming, laborers, agriculture, high tech agriculture is fast growing. Trucker delivery, software applications, building, whether it's carpentry or finishing or the trades, those are growing. And that is so strong within the southwestern corner. Shop salespersons having those great skills of communicating and collaborating and selling stuff. Food processing. Again, think of Richland Center and the great factories that we have here around that idea. And then car, van, motorcycle, automotive, nursing, food and beverage, and then general management. It's that idea that it's got to be strong in the communication skills, strong in those collaboration skills, and really back to that critical thinking. Yes, we want kids to have a solid foundation of skills. So yes, they're going to be able to do basic math. They're going to be able to do, yes, that solid reading skill. They're going to have basic writing skills. But beyond that, when it gets specific, we want to make sure that kids have leadership, that they're responsible, they're resilient, and they're ready to go into a job field.
I think I'm really happy to see that agriculture is one of the top growing jobs, especially in our area where agriculture means so much to our community and economy as well.
Yes, and I guess I would say it's a newly defined agriculture. You know, I can remember back to when my grandfather added on to the old barn to make it an extended barn, right? You wanted to make the pipeline go further. You had to have a few more cows to make more money. But that idea of every farm having 40 cows doesn't work anymore. It's a redefined agriculture where we're looking at, you know, crop health, and we're looking at technology on how to monitor that crop health, where we're looking at, if you're doing dairy, it's a very industrialized dairy. Some people think that's good, some people think that's bad, but it is still strong, and agriculture continues to be a strength of Wisconsin. You know, whether it's milk production or it's cheese production or it's the byproducts of the milk production that continue to flourish in Wisconsin, I think agriculture will always be a stronghold, especially in southwestern Wisconsin, where I think there's so much pride around the idea of agriculture.
You mentioned top fastest growing skills by 2030, and AI and big data is number one. There are jobs that will exist then that we don't even know about now, right?
Correct. You think about, I have to go back to old school, but you go out in a field and you check the moisture on a soybean, when now you can bring that soybean into a computer, analyze it, and then it gives you kind of like your data. So you're really thinking in big data, you're thinking in AI, you're thinking in networks. So agriculture has all of that technology and the things embedded within it. So you can take these fast growing jobs like agriculture or like software or like food processing. You have to add on the skill of AI, technology, cybersecurity, creative thinking, and resilience to that. So you have to add new skill to the new growing jobs and kind of respect but leave behind old ways and move forward. Now, old ways are still good ways. I don't want everybody to think that I'm giving everything away, but I do think we need to continue to grow and adapt and be resilient as learners ourselves.
A lot of these machines now have GPS right on them.
Correct.
I wouldn't have had any excuse to not have straight rows if I had that back in the day.
Yeah, there you go. Very true. Very true. I just saw one of the kids brought this forward. I was going past an ag class and they were talking about fencing, and it's a big growing thing out in, you know how we have shock collars on dogs sometimes so that they kind of stay within the yard. Mm-hmm. They're putting that on cattle now.
Oh.
You're kind of fencing very lightly because the cattle are wearing these collars that kind of train them into, this is your pasture and you can go over here on Monday and you can go over here on Tuesday. And you can plan that out on your computer so that the rotational grazing matches the cattle's programmed collar on them so that they can kind of transport themselves around pastures. So I think of that and I think of how crazy that would be to think about programming cattle for pasteurization, but it is something that people are doing and it's being very popular in Europe. And it's just bringing all of that here and trying to figure out the best of the best and how to get it to adapt to our American way.
Who would have ever thought? Right?
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Getting back to the portrait of a graduate, one of the key things you talked about there was communicator. And I've always said, I think a job applicant, if they can present themselves, they may not be as qualified as the next person, but if they can be a good communicator, they might have a leg up, right?
They will. They will. If you can find a young person, young man, young woman that wants to sit down with you and show you that they're willing to grow, that they're willing to communicate, that they're willing to work with you in your skill, that to me is more hireable than somebody that thinks they know the answer, right? So that effective communicator really does find the appropriate way of communicating with you. And in that, they have to be a good listener. They have to show respect. They have to have good eye contact. They have to make sure that they're organized so that they can match the need of whatever's being asked of them. So kids really do have to step away from their phone, they have to step away from their computer, and they have to be able to communicate in a reasonable, effective way if they want to lead. And that's what we want all kids to do, is be leaders within our new communities.
When you list the jobs, the fastest growing, the largest growing, where is education? That's a fair question, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. There's declining enrollment of kids going into fields of teaching. So we know that very few kids are going into the world of education wanting to be a teacher. I still believe that we will be able to find good teachers to do the good work that we need in our schools. Education just needs to adapt. It needs to adapt and be flexible. Just like I said, when we were looking at agriculture, that means that we have to, in education, take a look at big data. We need to think about cybersecurity and networking. We need to think about technology literacy. We need to be creative thinkers in education, and we need to be resilient and flexible. We have to make sure that we adapt so that we go with new things as they come our way. And to find that balance, you know, we don't want everything to be on a computer because that means the kid won't be a good communicator, right? So we have to find that good balance in there using the skills and the tools that we have. So a lot of people are saying that we went too far into technology and we need to bring them back. That doesn't mean that everybody's getting rid of all the Chromebooks and everybody's going back to just pencils. What it does mean is that we have to find that really good balance in there so that kids can use technology if they need it, but also use the pencil if they need it, so that it comes from their brain, not from AI. So I want them to learn about AI. I want them to learn to use it as a tool, just like I had to learn how to use a scientific calculator back in the day, but to know how to set it aside and use my brain to also estimate and be able to use mental math as well. So you got to find that balance, and that's what we're always trying to do.
There's a happy median, isn't there?
We sure hope so. Right. That's for sure.
I had a chance to be at Grandparents' Day with my granddaughter on Friday.
I love that.
Yes, and she's only a kindergartner, but we toured their school that they were in, and it's a private school. But I noticed in the 7th and 8th grade classrooms, they have the phone bank where you put your cell phone in there and it's locked. What's River Valley's cell phone policy?
Our cell phone policy is at the elementary, not allowed. At the intermediate, not allowed. Yeah, if kids bring them, they put them in their locker, they're supposed to be off. That usually is pretty clearly done. At the junior high school, they're not supposed to be out. They're supposed to keep them in their locker. A lot of kids try to push that envelope. There is new legislation that came out from our Wisconsin state government that basically demands that we have new policy for next year. So again, for all the people that don't love cell phones, you're going to love this. Kids are not allowed to have their phones out next year across the state in every school. They're not supposed to have them out. There's a couple reasons why we might need it. Some kids might use a phone to monitor their diabetic state if they have health needs, but that would have to be written into a health plan or into their IEP, their individualized educational plan. So with that, much less reliance on phones. A lot of classrooms have, like you say, a bank. If you have a phone, you're going to put it up here, you're going to put it away, you're going to make sure that it sits there, and you're not going to get that until the end of the day. And I think that's good stuff. I think it's really having the tool ready if we need it, but also setting it aside and knowing when to use it appropriately. So next year, kids all across River Valley, again, elementary, intermediate, no phones. But when you come to the junior high or senior high, they're not supposed to have them out at all. And I would guess that kids, especially the kids that leave for lunch, we still have juniors and seniors that get open campus for lunch in River Valley. They'll grab their phone and get it out as they leave the campus to go out and check things. I don't want parents and grandparents and people to worry. Like, if you need to get a hold of your kid, call the school. We pay people to sit there to find your kid. We want you to call us. We want you to be able to find us. We'll bring your kid down to the office. We'll let them give you a call. That's not a problem. You can always have access to your kid. You're just not going to be able to dial them up every hour, every minute like we have been. So I think that's a good move.
I think it's too.
A good move on Wisconsin. I think it's a good move on districts to really embrace it. Some have even gone as far as to say no phones allowed on campus. You may not even bring it in the building. We haven't gone there yet. The state might go there, but we haven't gone there yet in River Valley.
I think that's a tougher sell, really. But
it is.
I think for a teacher, it's good to have that cut and dried policy, because this teacher might be more forceful at enforcing it than another. And
correct.
You kind of have that battle going on too.
Yeah. So it doesn't allow us to fight anymore between, it's just a new rule that's across the state. And that way, if we have a kid maybe move to Valley from Waukesha, their rules in Waukesha are going to be the same rules that we have here in River Valley. So that's going to be exciting for us to just say, okay, all kids across the state, they have this knowledge that their phones are not to be out anymore. And that means their happy little smartwatch too, because you can still get phone calls and texts on your smartwatch. So that's put away. On their Chromebook, the chatting response on a Chromebook or a computer will be turned off. So there's a lot of restrictions that some kids will probably push at, but I think they're understanding that there's a time and place for it, and not always at school for sure.
What about writing answers on your hands?
Those are going to happen no matter what. As long as there's a pen, they'll be writing
they'll
on their
hands. They'll be
hand.
Writing on their hands.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
We'll take time out and have more with Lauren Glassbrenner, River Valley District Administrator, when our morning show continues. Lauren Glassbrenner is our guest on the morning show today as we discuss education and what's going on in the River Valley School District. One of the things that we've talked about often on this program is declining enrollment in school funding and anything new, anything
worse. Yeah, really, I just wanted to make sure that I noted, like, I was just online this morning and I was looking at declining enrollment facts, and I know Howard Markline has a great map and a great graph out of the 17th Senate District, and he really keeps on there a graph that's managing or kind of looking at our enrollment specific now to his district, our 17th Senate District. And in that, the enrollment from 2007 to now, basically, we're looking at about 20 years now. In the last 20 years, we've lost 3,000 children in the sense of declining enrollment in the 17th district. And so that's a huge drop. That's not easy for a district to change, but they haven't changed any way that they fund us. You know, funding comes to a school district based on the number of kids you have. It also comes to a district based on the value of the property. So I truly want to advocate for the idea that we need to redo the funding formulas. They're old. They have been written for when everybody had six kids on a family farm. They matched what we needed back in the early 90s. They do not match what education needs today. And again, we talked about technology. We talked about the demands of how schools have had to change, and they haven't made the change in funding. So what happens is districts go to operational referenda. And then from operational referenda, taxes rise and people get mad at schools when we're just, in our minds, again, as educators, reacting to the lack of change in funding. So I don't want to fight with anybody about politics, but I do want them to know educators are calling upon our legislators as well. Put everybody in the room and let's have this civic debate. Let's have this big conversation around school funding, because people are getting tapped out. I don't want my families to think that they have to make a choice between good funding or their home, right? Good school funding or your home should not be the choices we are making. And I think that's the fault of our legislators. So if any of them are hearing me, I want them to just know that we're ready for those conversations. I'm a part of huge conversations across the state of Wisconsin, not only in the 17th district, not only in CESA 3, which is southwestern Wisconsin, not only in the southern half of Wisconsin, but across the state. All superintendents are asking for this healthy civic discourse around school funding. It can't be that we're in a car crash and they give us a Band-Aid. After a car crash, we don't need a Band-Aid. We need an entire overhaul. And that's what school funding needs. We need an entire overhaul. So maybe there's a balance between property tax, sales tax, and income tax so that the property tax owner doesn't feel like they are overburdened and that there's a balance of the responsibility. So with that, yes, we have declining enrollment. And with that, we want to respond to it. But I'm not in charge of that. Yeah, someday maybe I'll run for office and I can be a part of that conversation. But for right now, I need my legislators to step up, open up that big conversation, and know that educators are ready for it as well.
it does force you to be frugal. And I know you guys have done that. You know, you have to look at staffing and, you know, numbers there. And you've had to make some hard decisions as well.
I think states districts across the state have had to make really hard decisions. And everybody says, well, live within your means, live within your means. I try to, but there are demands that come from the state legislator that say you have to teach this, you have to teach that, you have to do it in this way. All of that costs money. And to do that, we have to continue to grow a little bit and be flexible, like we talked about before. Technology costs money. Upkeep on buildings costs money. Gasoline for buses costs money. And when we don't get any additional funding, you have to cut other things in order to cover that. So we continue to try to do that. And again, I think many districts across the state of Wisconsin have had to go to operational referenda. I think it's somewhere above 90% of all districts out of the 421 districts in the state of Wisconsin have had to now go to operational referenda. Brian Cry likes to, he's my finance manager, the assistant superintendent. He really likes to talk about it as you get tight in your budget, you have to get a second job. That's what districts have done. They've gotten a second job and they've gone to operational referenda. We get our funding and then we have to go back for the second job and get operational funding through referenda. So,
have you taken a look at what maybe other states are doing?
Absolutely.
Or do you have an idea of what would be a good fix?
I do believe, as I kind of alluded to before, that other states have done this differently and have a healthier way of looking at it. Every state's individually kind of a little different, and it depends on the demographic of the state, whether it's heavy in industry or if it's heavy in agriculture. But we could take Wisconsin's general budget and think about the great gifts of Wisconsin and compare that to maybe there's some out east like Connecticut, there's some like Minnesota, there's some like Michigan. You find other states that have similar demographics and then you look at their funding and you pull it together and you take the best of the best and try to make yours. And there was a Blue Ribbon Commission that I believe was about 10 years ago, and Luther Olson headed that. Now, he's a great man. He's a retired Republican legislator that had a Blue Ribbon Commission come together and say, we need to fix this, and we need to fix it in these kind of ways. And they had people from both sides of the aisle that came together, had these big debates, and then they put it on a shelf. Nobody took action. And I think it was Representative Kitchens, and I think it was Representative Olson that did that, Luther. And I think we have to jump back into that big conversation because our property owners are requiring it of us. I don't think your school district should have to cut to get you tax breaks. That's not our job. Our job is to educate the future of tomorrow. And I really would like to get out of the politics and get back to educating the kids based on a balanced budget. And that one, and a balanced budget that was equitable among districts. You know, we also get funding per kid, right? That's the way it happens. But that number was set back in the day. River Valley's got set low because that year we were being frugal. So our number for how much money we get per kid was set low. As an example, I'm going to round it up. I think we get about $11,000, $11,500 per kid, right? That's where we are. There is a district in the state of Wisconsin that gets $25,000 per kid based on when that was set back in the 90s. And that doesn't seem equitable. Our state constitution requires the state of Wisconsin to educate kids in an equitable way. And I frankly don't think we're meeting the constitutional obligation. So I think, again, our legislators have to dive into this deep conversation of what is equitable. How do we match that? Maybe there's a different way for funding suburban, rural, and urban. I don't know. But again, if they want me to sit on their next Blue Ribbon Commission, I'll do my best to get there.
Yeah. Well, you'd be good at it.
I don't know. I have a lot of wind. I hope it's used for good. Yeah.
But yeah, 25 grand per student as opposed to, you know, 11. So I mean, I don't understand. I mean, because salaries maybe are a little bit higher in some of the suburban areas. But not much, probably.
Yeah. And it's based on tax dollars. And so when you look at a growing area, and I'll use an example, and I don't want to victimize them or villainize them, I should say. I don't want like a Middleton Cross Plains to feel like they're doing anything wrong. But when Middleton Cross Plains can have an entire, I don't know, administrative team around equity, and they have these great jobs in their district office to bring up the best ways to do things for equity. Yet we have three principals and people are mad at us for having too many administration. It just doesn't seem fair. And they're 30 minutes up and down the highway from each other. And we have to look at those things. I want everybody to throw it on the table and say, okay, your department maybe is too big. Yours is too small. We have to figure out a better way to do this. And I really do feel like the rural schools have taken it on the chin. We have a lot of land out here, right? That's your land value. So they think that we are wealthy out here in the country and we have all this land value. Well, that matched when the land value used to have six kids coming from that farmhouse. It doesn't anymore. That land has been scoffed up by a lot of industrial farming areas, and now there's not as many kids. And so the balance from the 90s doesn't balance anymore. So again, I get all heated up. I'm sorry about that. But I get upset because I just don't feel like they're giving their fair share to rural America. And I think that's not only in Wisconsin. I think that's in the Midwest. Kids out in rural environments deserve the exact same chance for success as a kid in suburbia. And I just don't believe that we have kept up with the times when it comes to school funding.
For private schools, too, it's not cheap to send your student to a private school either. Those rates continue to go up as well.
They do. But I'll pick on the private schools. It's still the public school's funding for their transportation or their special education needs. So it's my budget that controls the public and private transportation. It's just what's in the state constitution, so that's what we do. So yes, you can go to a private school, but it's still the public school that is paying for the transportation or the special education funding or the Title I funding or the other things that are obligated in the state budget. And I have rules I have to follow within public that are standards, that are testing, that are requirements of hiring, that make sure that every teacher is certified. That's not the same in a private school. Not that the private schools are doing anything wrong. I believe in that choice for everybody. I truly do. But that is not the same. That's, again, an apples to oranges comparison. If they want to get the funding, then we need to get them all on board with all the requirements that we follow in public.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. America's 250th.
Yes. Speaking of civic discourse, right? Speaking of civics, we are excited for the fact that we are going to have a semi-quincentennial celebration.
You said that well.
I did my best. I'm cheating. I'm looking at a piece of paper. But that semi-quincentennial celebration is really the 250th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence. And so that's an exciting time from July 4th, 1776. So every district in the state of Wisconsin is also entering into this where we have to have celebrations in our classrooms. Everybody from 4K all the way through our graduates at 12th grade need to do some activities around this civic idea and emphasizing civics, which is a pillar of our democracy. So I'm excited about that. The pillars of democracy really get us to talk about the rights and duties and responsibilities of being a citizen. And so I'm excited about teaching that to our kids, but making sure that everybody understands that this incredible celebration is a nonpartisan charge to our schools to make sure no matter where your parents vote or how they vote, that we're all celebrating America. And again, the United States is an incredible institution that we need to preserve, but we also need to make sure that every kid understands what civics is. So civics is a course that I'm required as a district to make sure that every kid has. So we will make sure that's coming up, and every kid that graduates from River Valley will take a semester of civics. So they understand the rights, the duties, and responsibilities of the democratic process so that when they enter their community, like we talked before, college, career, community ready, we're going to make sure that all those kids are informed, responsible citizens. But to do that, they need to be informed, be able to take action, and do it with civility. Back to communication, Phil. We need them to do it with civility to make sure that we have those hard conversations in a good way. So, America 250. We're excited for that. And before the end of the year, look for some great things coming out of your schools around the celebration of that wonderful thing known as the semi-quincentennial.
Yeah, very good. So your individual classrooms are doing some things. And
yeah. I think it'll be really good for the kids to understand like the history of our flag, the history of why the Statue of Liberty is there. Maybe they look at some of the original documents, which you can go onto the Smithsonian, and I'm trying to find all the great links for the teachers so that we can show them an actual copy of the Constitution so that they can study that, so they can see the original words that were in those real primary documents that really formed our country. So I'm getting ready to make sure that my teachers feel good about that, whether it's a video about the flag and the importance, whether it's celebrating Veterans Day versus Memorial Day and how they are different. It's about educating kids on America. And we're excited to do that work in your public schools.
I remember 1976 and the bicentennial.
Yep.
And how large that was.
And
I think it's building. I don't know if it's quite the level that it was back then, but I was a kid then.
Yeah.
It seemed like it was, you know, red, white, and blue mailboxes and fire hydrants and all those kind of things.
I remember that too. The big parade went down the, you know, main street of Fenimore, and we left school and we all went over and sat in front of the memorial building, and there were big parades that went by. And back in the day, my dad worked at a large cheese factory, and there was always Igor the Mouse that went up and down in the parades and all the great things, and it was about that celebration of the centennial. So we're excited to do that again. If it's not the parades in town, at least it will be parades in our schools to make sure that the kids understand the importance of the mission and vision of what America was meant to be.
And Memorial Day coming up here before too long?
Absolutely. So there'll be great things out there as well, where we'll have bands and celebrations that we'll publicize about it well.
Let's talk about your end of the year things at River Valley, including graduation. When will that be?
Graduation, again, will be on May 30th.
Okay.
So that's a great day. That is a Saturday. I believe the celebration's at noon, but you'll want to make sure that you get parking and all the things way before then so that people aren't running in at last minute. So we're excited about that. It's always a good thing to usher your kids off after their 12 years of hard work and to really celebrate the parents and grandparents and community members that have helped get the kids there. It's not just a celebration of the kid. It's a celebration of the community that got the kid there. And so we're excited about that. So that's coming up on May 30th. The last day for kids will be June 5th. And really just continue to think and pray for all those teachers in the next 3 weeks that have to keep the roof on while all these great things wrap up. So we've got field trips and celebrations. And now the celebration of the 250th for America. We want to finish strong, but in a controlled, wonderful way. So again, just be thinking of your teachers as the sun comes out. Kids sometimes don't want to be inside as much anymore. So give them your hat and thank them for their great week work. Last week was Teacher Appreciation Week. And just, it's a calling to be an educator in today's day. I guess I would say it's a calling where we really have incredible people just devoting every day to the kids of our future. And I'm just excited to be a part of that at River Valley. Again, my job is to make the systems flow so they can do their great work. And I think that's something that we really take pride in over at the Valley.
It's been a cooler spring, so maybe the kids aren't quite so squirrely. But,
yeah.
When it's really nice, it's hard to stay focused.
Amen. I hear you. That's for sure. They still love recess no matter what. So when we get these warm, sunny days, then we shove the kids outside because we know they'll learn better after they get a few squiggles out of themselves out on the recess space. But they're doing good. The teachers are doing good. The kids are doing good. We just want to finish strong.
Class of 2026, you got some bright students in there.
We do. We have some real leaders coming out of River Valley. We're excited for their futures, and we're excited about the next things that come. It's all about the numbers to me right now. So I'm thinking about my graduation speech and thinking about the number 26. So that's a little bit of what's out there. And there's a lot of things in the world that come in at 26. You know, there's 26 cards in a deck, and there's a lot of 26s out there that kind of really fall into, it's actually 56. But
50,
there's
52.
Yeah, there's a lot of 26s out there. I'm trying to think, maybe it's a euchre deck.
Yeah, well, euchre is 24.
Depending on the number.
You got to keep working on that speech.
I'll be working on that speech more, Phil. Don't worry. But, you know, that idea of 26, there's a lot of things out there. So we're excited for those kids that are going to end up being the next best community members for us in the Valley. And we're excited about that. Many of them will go off to college. Many of them will go to 2 or 4 year institutions. Many will go to apprenticeships. Some will go off to the service, and some will go straight into a career. No matter what they do, we want them to be able to set, you know, their futures bright. So we're excited for their next steps.
So many of them come back. It won't be long. We'll be talking about the River Valley School Fair.
But
I'm always amazed when we go to the fair how many alumni come back and you're thinking, didn't you just graduate last year? Oh, wait a minute. Yeah. It was 4 years or five years ago.
It's amazing. It's amazing. And that entire celebration of homecoming, I always say this, Phil, we start the year, then we try to get to homecoming, which is an entire week of celebration. From homecoming, we go to Thanksgiving. From Thanksgiving, we get to the holidays. From the holidays, we get to spring break. And now it's May. Yeah. And off we go, and another year's finished. So we try to do the great things between the beginning and the end and just kind of continue forward.
Field trips, too? You've got a few of those going on?
Oh, yeah. Sure. There are always celebrations at the end of the year for the kids that have done the great things so that we can get them out in the community. So there'll be kids going up to Black Hawk Lake. There'll be some going to Governor Dodge. There'll be kids that go over to Devil's Lake. There'll be kids that go to the zoo. There'll be kids going up to, you know, all the different things at the end of the year and really celebrating the great things they've done all year long as we kind of get them to jump off and go to their next level. So new in River Valley, you know, we'll have second graders coming up to the intermediate school. So second grade is becoming a new big step. We've got sixth graders that'll go over to the junior high. That's a new big step. They used to go at eighth grade. Now they're going at sixth grade. From seventh and eighth grade being in the back wing, now they'll flop up into our high school. So those are all great things and kind of new transitions that are happening in the Valley. And we're excited about that.
A year ago, you were talking about all the moving and all the parts that had to fit together. It's a little less stressful this off season, right?
Yeah. Last summer, we had 75 incredible educators have to move. We don't have that happening this summer. So it'll be a summer of just getting ready for the next year, which is the 26-27. We're excited about what great things there are out there for us to do next.
Are you going to be helping at any fairs? I know you have some of the cattle sales.
Yeah, that's some of the best stuff that I get to do because I really think that's something special about Valley because we're in Iowa County. So I go to the Iowa County Fair over at Mineral Point. We're in Sauk County. So we go up to Sauk and enjoy that up at Baraboo. And then we're also a part of Richland County. So we come over here for the fair. So I get to be a part of that. Sherry Graffunder lets me kind of tag along with her as she does the great things with FFA. So it's a great time when you hit that end of summer and the fairs start coming. We do those three. We get into the school fair and off we go.
Great job. Always nice to have you.
Thank you, Phil.
I guess maybe be a little relaxed in June when you come back to see us, right?
Yeah. I'll be excited to come back in June. I'll talk about what some of the goals might be for the 26-27 school year and some of the things that maybe are on the horizon for the district.
Wonderful. Good to see you again, Lauren.
Thank you, Phil.
Lauren Glassbrenner joining us, River Valley District Administrator, for today's morning show.